financial independence, country shopping, van nomadism, security culture, ethical enclaves, crypto anarchy, legal interstices, survivalism. Join your hosts, Shane and Kyle, as they explore this freedom strategy known as Vonning. You're listening to the Vonning Podcast.
And welcome to the Vonning Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion, or as much as you can be, at least. I'm your host, Shane, flying solo, while Kyle works furiously on getting all of his ducks in a row for season two, as I'm doing, obviously not right now, but we'll get back to doing here momentarily. Since governments are the primary coercers upon individuals, the Vonning Podcast is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. Reuse and modification is permitted to anyone, except for governments and the agents thereof. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. So this episode is titled A Crash Course on Vonu, Kyle on the Concord Show. And the show notes can be found at VonuPodcast.com/intermission2. Again, at VonuPodcast.com/intermission2. Back in early February, soon after the official launch of the podcast, Kyle was interviewed on Maggie Rose's The Concord Hour, a Patriot radio program over on Revolution Radio. If she's still there, I haven't really followed up and, you know, don't much care to, honestly. The first hour of the program focuses on Vonu and political crusading, whereas the second is on applied Vonuism, so, you know, the practice of Vonu. I'll go ahead and put this warning out there. This will not be the high-level audio quality that you have come to know and love in this podcast. It's actually recorded in 22K for 22K mono for those who are audio fiends. Very, very low quality to go out over the airwaves. And, you know, for some odd reason, the Patriot community is largely stuck in the 20th century. You know, most of them doing their shows via cell phones over on Blog Talk Radio. I listened to one about 3 or 4 weeks ago when it was one that the only reason I listen to some of these, or actually all of these, is when Kyle's on there. It was atrocious. It was so bad. It was so bad. So, yeah, unfortunately, for some reason, the Patriots are stuck in the 20th century, although they're kind of stuck in a little before that, too, you know, with the Constitution. So I guess we can't really be surprised that they're a little behind on the times here. But, yeah, they don't really seem to care. I've pointed it out to them before and said, hey, just get a $50 microphone, or hell, like, even just use the onboard microphone in your laptop. It'd be far better, and just do, like, a Google Hangout or something. But, yeah, they don't, tend to listen to me very much. But luckily, Maggie's show is a little bit better. Just a little bit better. But again, it's not what you're used to hearing. Now, I'll provide one other warning here, and this kind of pissed me off when I listened to the interview live. In this interview, she makes the ridiculous claim that not having a driver's license is just like not utilizing the vote, or something along those lines. Oh my god. That's certainly not the case. The only similarity between the two is that they are both slave tags provided by governments. As far as the major differences go, a driver's license is required if you're trying to avoid the bludgies. In other words, it's coercive either way, whether you have it or not. If you have it, you're complying with the law to avoid punishment. And if you don't have it, you're going to be coerced on the side of the road. So, there's really, in short, it's coercive. Now, as far as I understand it, guys, there's no law saying that you're required to vote here in the so-called geographical location known as the United States. At least not yet. Oh, God, don't give me any ideas. It's purely voluntary. Purely voluntary. So, I mean, if you vote, if you vote, you're not going to get punished by the state. And if you don't vote, you're not going to get punished by the state either. But regardless of what you do, you're going to end up badly when it comes to political crusading. Anyways, I figured I'd go ahead and head that one off ahead of time, so you guys weren't sitting there hearing that and confused, or if I missed it, or what was going on there. But nonetheless, all of that aside, I definitely appreciate Maggie having Kyle on to discuss Vonu. Hopefully, influence some patriots to give up their worship of Donald Trump and pursue practical strategies in pursuing freedoms. You know, I'd even concede to committees of safety. I mean, that's what constitutionalists should be doing as part of their action. But that all went out of the window when Donald Trump, entered the political arena. So, You know, I have my doubts that that's going to be the case. I'm sure they're going to continue their political crusading, or as they're on to now, you know, petitioning the president to please release our political prisoners. They've surely gone unanswered. No surprise to us, right? Anyways, before turning over to the interview, I'm sure some of you are asking, where in the gosh darn heck is season two? We know. We've got one more full-length intermission episode. There'll be an extremely enjoyable interview I did over on the Seeds of Liberty podcast with Jeremy Hengler, Dave Painter, and Andre. I don't know his last name, unfortunately. But we covered a lot in just 1 hour, and I think you guys are going to really, really dig it. Following that, we will release one shorter preparatory episode. Now, obviously, the focus of Season 2 is the practice of Vanu, so we'll focus on the solutions we're going to present it. But there's some very, very interesting libertarian history regarding Sam Konkin, the founder of Agorism, and Rayo. Yes, you heard that right. You heard that right. We touched upon it in the Vanu podcast number one. And it might have come up, you know, in passing and some of the other ones, but I don't recall those off the top of my head. But yeah, definitely some very, very interesting stuff. And I want to get that into the intermission episode so that when we start talking about ethical enclaves, we don't have to cover that there when we're going to be talking about the strategy. So I'd like to go, a little more in depth on that portion. But yeah, that's all I've got. Please enjoy Kyle's interview with Maggie Rose.
Kyle, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's good to be on with you again, Maggie. Thanks for having me on.
I just enjoy so much, and there's so much I learn from you, and so much of it does resonate with me. Some of the things that you and I have talked about, I wish I could completely, fully, 200% either put them in practice myself or embrace them. A lot of things I agree with you. Some things I don't quite understand, and I'm hoping you're going to be able to educate us a little bit about that today.
Well, sure, you know, not a problem. And again, you know, I prefer clarity to agreement. So, you know, what I just want is people to just understand what their options are in terms of pushback against the establishment, the government, the state, so that they can have some enjoy some individual liberty during their own lifetimes.
Well, what I would like to do is I'd like you to kind of introduce how you first got started with this, a little bit about your Bastille blog, and give that website. You also have Liberty Under Attack that you and Shane are quite actively involved in. And then I'd like to be able to go into a little bit what this definition means and how people, whether here in the United States, but also in Canada and around the world, can put this practice in their own life. As you may be aware, we have a lot of military veterans that have retired and moved overseas. And their family members are listening to the Concord Show, and they're telling them about these programs. And so there's people overseas that are listening as well, not just Americans, but as you know, people across the pond in Australia and Canada and England, everywhere in between. So I think that much of what I read can actually be practiced everywhere, including in the urban cities.
All right, I'll keep that in mind, because one of the methods of Vanu is actually something called country shopping, which is covered in section 2 of the book. But sure, well, as far as my work goes, I mean, I cover a lot of political and anti-political type material on my blog, which is the Last Bastille blog, which you can find at thelastbastille.com. Bastille, of course, spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E. And it was interesting because when Shane Radliff and I were kind of producing together the LUA Direct Action series, we were looking at a lot of different things, because the inspiration for that was an article we co-authored together called The Freedom Umbrella of Direct Action, which people can find at libertyunderattack.com/FUDA, F-U-D-A, libertyunderattack.com/FUDA. And the FUDA is now, the Freedom Umbrella is now in its third edition, and it's gone through some revisions, and one of those revisions was that we added Vanu onto it, because we actually took a few episodes of the Direct Action series and actually really looked at Rayo's work in real depth. And then, of course, in the very last concluding episode of the Direct Action series, I decided to change my anti-political ideology to Vanuism, which of course is defined as the advocacy of an invulnerability to coercion. Because a lot of people really don't care about the fact that they are quite vulnerable to coercion, especially coercion perpetuated by the state or government. And so that's kind of like the short that's the long and short of it, at least in, I guess, in a sense. And so it was eventually Shane's idea to create a second podcast series independent of the usual LUA, Liberty Under Attack, type material that focused exclusively on Vanu and went into much greater detail, which of course is located, which is of course became known as the Vanu Podcast, which you can find at vanupodcast.com. That's V as in Victor, O as in Oscar, N as in November, U as in uniform, vanupodcast.com. And on there, you can get a free copy of Vanu, The Search for Personal Freedom by Rayo, as well as the free audiobook version that Shane and I made for those people who may not initially have a chance to read the book, which is actually not very long, but say if you're stuck in your car commuting to and from work, you can at least listen to the free audiobook version. But of course, for those people who can read, then you can read the free PDF version, which is now available for free download, which I can't emphasize enough. So, Maggie, yeah, we're trying to get this material into people's hands so they can realize just exactly what their options are. You don't have to be vulnerable to coercion any longer. Rayo kind of explained how you can at least begin the process of how to get out.
Yeah, I found it was very interesting that I guess how it started was he first had the experience of living in a van. Is that how that kind of started? And then he talked about, you know, having tents and basically moving around. Was he what you would have considered kind of the tail end of the hippie area where many of them were practicing this, but of course there was no name for it at the time?
Well, Rayo was writing about his experiences throughout the 1960s and early 70s up until his disappearance in 1974, of course. So, right. Yeah, I guess you could say that he was commingling with perhaps the hippies and some other folks of different labels, stripes, and flavors, basically trying to, you know, how do you be free in an unfree world, I guess would be one way of phrasing it. And so I think with Rayo, it originally started out actually with an attempt to establish what I guess could be called a sovereign freeport, what some of the anarchists would call a permanent autonomous zone, or what people who are more legalistic would consider like a special economic zone or something to that effect. Let me make this more concrete. Think of like Hong Kong, but instead of it being Hong Kong, it would be a version here somewhere around the North American continent. And so because an attempt at that had failed at one point, Rayo decided to just kind of go on his own, and he initially started with what he called van nomadism. And interestingly enough, if anybody goes on to YouTube and types in van dwelling, there's now all sorts of people who perhaps don't realize it, but they are actually copying what Rayo himself was doing in the 1960s by living in their vans full time. In fact, actually, speaking on that point, during the Direct Action series, Shane interviewed the one and only Alex Ansari, who at the time was living in his RV full-time for well over a year. So, I mean, whether it be Alex Ansari or it would be various other, you know, individuals filming their experiences living in a van or an RV full-time, the fact of the matter is that there is now a resurgent interest in some of the techniques Rayo is doing, but perhaps without understanding the overall strategy behind it, which of course is all about an invulnerability to coercion, you know, hence what I'm trying to explain here.
Now, it's interesting the way that I read some of what he wrote here. I'm thinking, as you know, I have 5 kids, 4 sons and a daughter. And one of my sons happens to have just turned 29, and so he's pushing 30 here real soon, about your age. And he has decided for some reason, and people and the family and others have said, oh, he doesn't want to be responsible. He doesn't want to be responsible for a relationship or be responsible for any particular thing. He will work a job and he's a hard worker. Oh my gosh. Sometimes he's even worked two jobs at one time. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if it's he gets bored or what happens, but he will just literally walk away from the job. He will just quit, up and quit. And he's done a lot of couch surfing back and forth and has a lot of friends all over the country and everything. And it's like he can't stay in one place for any longer than a certain period of time. And is, I don't know if it's like some people feel, is he in search of himself? Is it a spiritual thing? Is it sort of like what they call in Australia is a walkabout? I mean, here he is right now. Now he's planning to go to Hawaii to live. And he doesn't have a job waiting for him. He doesn't have a driver's license. He only has a state ID. He's hoping that he'll be able to work on some of the farm cooperatives that are there. He's got friends over there right now that are telling him, you know, this is what we're all doing. Some of us are living on the beaches or whatever. But, of course, that can put a real stress on the economy there in Hawaii. Is this what you would consider another sort of achieving freedom? Would you say that that is what he's doing? Because he doesn't want to be tied down to regulations where you have to work from this time to this time and you have to adhere to whatever the state or the feds tell you that you have to. Would you say that this is his world's view of how he's trying to deal with this?
You have to keep in mind that a lot of people who may mean well, will use techniques that Vanuans, those who actually have a invulnerability to coercion, would do. So, for example, I resent kind of having to put this in the collective pronouns, but I can't think of another way to do it. Us Vanuans and Vanuists, Vanuists, of course, being those who advocate for an invulnerability to coercion, such as what I'm doing now, we often get confused with other people, and that's understandable, right? A lot of times we're confused with the so-called preppers. We're confused with people who may be known probably more commonly as like perpetual travelers, which I think is more what you're getting at with your example. And again, it's understandable because the methods are different. Because the methods are the same or very, very similar. You must keep in mind, though, that we're a lot more broadly disciplined. And a lot of times we'll use the techniques from various other people in order to make ourselves, and I can't stress this enough, invulnerable to coercion. So regarding the couch surfing and so forth, you're kind of getting at, the only reason any of us would do that is because, we don't want to be coerced by, let's say, a police raid. A lot of constitutionalists and patriot types of one flavor or another will often talk about the Fourth Amendment. And that it is well-intentioned and so forth, but the Fourth Amendment or any sort of legal protection, whether it be from a Bill of Rights or anything else, is really, you know, what Rayo referred to as a legal interstice or legal protection. And unfortunately, much as Rayo said, laws and their interpretations often change. Vanu is not about legality, it's about practicality. And so you can risk your liberty or freedom, such as it were, on the legal interstices of these disgusting lawyers who twist and bend words so much that it makes your head spin, which, of course, is what my next book is all about. Or you can try and implement practical techniques. Some are technological. Others are just more, actually, in some ways, based on security culture, which is what my last book was about. And all that. So, I mean, that's kind of the choices that are being made here. So in terms of couch surfing, in terms of, I think you were also kind of alluding to what some people would refer to as freelancing, where you're not working a 9-to-5,
right.
You know, just over broke, or what people call a job.
Right.
I think that the main idea is to not be coerced. And that is what the focus of Vanu is. And again, I can't say enough, you know, Vanu is defined as the condition or quality of, as well as the action of achieving, an invulnerability to coercion. So for those of us who are pursuing Vanuens, which is defined as being in the process of achieving an invulnerability to coercion, which is what I'm currently doing, I'm not necessarily, I guess, in some sense, a pure Vanuan yet, but I am pursuing Vanuan, so I'm more invulnerable today than I was yesterday, because I think it's important to keep in mind that Vanu is not an all-or-nothing thing. There are shades of gray, much like the more broader idea of security culture. But that's kind of the idea. So to make this a little bit more concrete and answer your question more directly, in terms of couch surfing, in terms of freelancing, in terms of even food storage and having a bug out bag and those kind of activities, the only reason that Vanuans would do those kind of things is that we're trying not to be coerced, and that combination of those activities plus others are all intended to make us as invulnerable to coercion as possible. That's the idea, as explained in Rayo's free book that you can download in PDF format, Vanu, The Search for Personal Freedom.
Now, one of the things that I noticed in the book, and it was, I think, on page 49, it talked about living at peace in a place of refuge. And he says, quote, "If you wish to battle a state through political agitation or over its civil disobedience, fight where you, quote, know the territory, unquote, in your, quote, native land, unquote, or a country picked with that in mind. But when you seek a, quote, haven from the storm, unquote, quietly comply with or bypass local laws. If your state of anchorage becomes intolerable, don't waste energy in extended public criticism or conflict. Apply your free market principles by setting sail for sunnier waters." Now, one of the things that I noticed was that he said in here that many people that practice what you're attempting to practice can do it right, basically, right under the watchful eye of the state, and the state doesn't even notice that you're there. How can you blend into the scenery, kind of an anonymity, without actually having people aware of the fact that you were trying to kind of remove yourself? Because if you remember, in Waco, one of the things that really upset the government is there were so many people that were literally walking away from their pensions, walking away from their Social Security payments. They were seniors saying, "We won't take anything that the government gives us. We will go live in a community where we work together, we pull together, and we survive and stand together." And the government could not have people that were removing themselves from the clutches of society. And that's what I heard from some of the people that survived Waco that told me personally that this is what their family members were trying to do. Is they were, I guess, trying to practice a form of what you now call voyeurism, right?
Well, regarding the Branch Davidians, just more as a historical case study at this point, correct me if I'm wrong, Maggie, but I don't think they were consciously exercising their right to privacy in a practical manner, which of course is security culture. I guess that's a little bit more of a deeper topic that would involve looking at, how public were they? Honestly, I just don't know about that. What I can say is this: if you have people who are a religious minority or ethnically not liked Muslims, then yeah, they are going to be targeted by the government, because if you remember, the Obama White House, much like this current executive administration of the federal government, really doesn't like Arabic peoples, really doesn't like Muslims, and more importantly, doesn't like Arabs. I mean, look how they're treating the Syrian Christians. And I know that may ruffle some feathers, but someone has to actually call a spade at some point. The United States federal government makes use of Arabic peoples for their own ends in order to continue their perpetual warfare that never, ever, ever ends. And so it's very interesting for me to watch how many of the same people who don't want to be coerced by government will hypocritically, and this is why I don't like political crusading and neither did Rayo, will hypocritically say, well, the federal government isn't abiding by the Bill of Rights, and a lot of those same exact people will turn around, as they did this past year, and support a despot like Donald Trump. And that is what Rayo himself called the controlled schizophrenia, people who basically betray their own principles and act quite hypocritically, very blatantly so. And that's also why Rayo said that for libertarians, the choice is between freedom and neurosis. As he said, function determines form, means determine ends. How you achieve your freedom is just as important as what the ultimate product looks like of freedom in actual action.
So you feel very strongly about Trump being the president and feeling that this is not going to be a good 4 years. And yet, what choice do we have with Hillary?
It wasn't a good past 8 years under Obama either, or the 8 years before that under Bush Jr., or
Agreed.
The several years before Clinton. I mean, look, the historic, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I will say a little bit here because it was mentioned in Rayo's book back in the 60s and 70s when he was basically describing not only his own time period, but in many ways our own time period right now, because he foresaw how a lot of this would turn out, which unfortunately I think, you know, speaking in this year, 2017, I think Rayo is probably more correct than perhaps he himself realized. The problem of political crusading is rather quite profound. When people who put their faith in a strongman archetype, who believe that they don't have to take any personal responsibility for their freedom because Big Daddy government will do it for them, because he's telling them things that fall softly on their ears, like build a wall or I'll increase tariffs to allegedly make America great again, when in fact the actual truth for anybody who is not economically illiterate is that when you raise tariffs, the costs of those tariffs are always passed on to the customers at the end of the supply chain. That is a fact. That is what always happens when governments, the state, increases tariffs, exactly like what Alexander Hamilton propose and encourage the Congress to do back during the early Republic in the 1790s, thereby leading to the Whiskey Rebellion in 1971. That is history. It has been repeated over and over again. Just ask the Southerners who suffered during the war between the states. Tariffs and increasing tariffs is an unmitigated evil. This is not a little thing. People start wars over that kind of stuff. It is absolutely tyrannical.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you. And it's interesting that how our country, I just watched the movie for the first time, believe it or not. I thought I'd seen every movie that Tom Hanks had made. And Tom Hanks was actually born and raised in the neck of the woods where I was born and raised. He went to a high school just down the street from my high school and graduated, I think, a couple years behind me. And I had not seen the movie Charlie Wilson's War. And I sat here with my mom and my husband watching it the other night and realized that that whole thing with that covert operation, that I did not know anything really about that. I was not aware that this congressman from the Republic of Texas, I think he was in your district too, that Charlie Wilson was trying so hard to help the Afghanistan people and their children and their women who are being butchered by the Russians in trying to give them weapons. Of course, it ended up going from, you know, 5 million to 10 million to way above that. I think it ended up with $1 billion. But what was interesting is it seems like our country only wants to get involved in those places where they can steal the resources from those people. And if there's no resources that our government wants, the CIA wants, then we can let those people just be butchered and we can walk away and not even care. The whole thing is insane.
Yes, it is. And I would like to read a quote or two by Rayo regarding political crusading, because maybe perhaps I have offended some people who support His Majesty, the shiny rug, this man, this billionaire plutocrat New Yorker who thinks he's all that just because the Electoral College, not the American people, but the Electoral College, as enumerated in the federal Constitution, selected him as the President of the United States. Here's what Rayo said back in the 60s. Quote, objections of the political crusaders to self-liberation, mostly innuendos, ex-cathedra pronouncements, and misrepresentations, have been refuted by me and others. but the Crusaders have consistently failed to refute or even acknowledge serious objections to any would-be libertarian political movement. But while I reject political crusading as a strategy, this does not mean I shun active resistance as a tactic. The self-liberator has tactical advantages over a would-be insurrectionist of any brand. The political crusader, that would include the Trump people, the political crusader who wants to take over or destroy a state seriously threatens the rulers and will bring strong countermeasures. But the libertarian who is satisfied to, quote, coexist in protracted conflict with the state is merely an annoyance. The more astute ruler is aware, as is the libertarian, that most people are sheep and will remain sheep no matter how the libertarian lives. Of course, the statist would still rather quash the libertarian if this were easy. So libertarian tactics must be such as to make counterattacks ineffective and prohibitively costly, close quote.
Wow.
Yeah. Well,
then my only question is, if we didn't have the Electoral College doing what they did, right now you and I would be having as our quote-unquote commander-in-chief Hillary. What say you?
She would still be a tyrant, though, perhaps of a different flavor. But you see, it's not even – see, most people, when it comes to political crusading, or what my first book was on, which was more reformism, which is the more typical political science term, people really get overly focused on the specific flavor and so-called public policy of the wannabe ruler in question. Right, it's like, oh, well, you have the progressive socialist on the left, and then you have the conservative fascist on the right, and now let's all quibble with each other on this 3x5 card of allowable political debate as to whether we want to be ruled over by a socialist or a fascist. I mean, that is the left-right paradigm in a nutshell, and people, if they want genuine freedom and liberty in their own lives, or, as I'm advocating here, VANU, which is more of a practical invulnerability to coercion, which doesn't rely on changing laws all the damn day, then it doesn't really matter the particular authoritarian flavor of people getting into office of one kind or another, because the main problem is the office itself. You know, if you think about it, it's think about this. The presidency of the United States of America. I mean, I don't know about you, but it's almost as like you're referring to God Almighty. I'm sorry. You know, these tyrants and despots of one kind or another, they're just not all that, ladies and gentlemen. And really, at the end of the day, if we're going to be really honest about it, what they want to do and what they have done, which includes war crimes, probably most easily, you know, Obama's drone strikes and Bush Jr.'s invasion of Iraq and Afghanistan, most of which people have now forgotten about, because that's emblematic of our time period, isn't it? It's this constant forgetting, this constant erasure of the past, of throwing things down the memory hole. And of course, one thing in particular, the depleted uranium rounds that were used against the people in Fallujah, that not just, it's one thing to individually murder people, but it's another thing to genetically wreck an entire population for who knows how many untold generations. This is what happens when you have political crusading. And now you have the Donald surrounding himself with many of the same neoconservatives that George Bush Jr. did, and some of my former colleagues in the alternative media think that Trump is going to keep America out of war. You got to be kidding me. So yeah. No, I don't trust political crusaders. I don't trust their controlled schizophrenia, which is underlying the political crusading, because they're contradicting themselves all the damn time. And Rayo noticed this back in the 60s.
Right. So the thing is, being the fact that the people that practice what he did and what you did are in the minority, what do you think we can do to wake up the masses as to what's going on and how we're all being played as stool pigeons, basically? We're basically being the wool's being pulled over our eyes, and we're being drummed into a sense of kind of apathy and complacency.
I would really say that a starting point among other starting points would be, I think you had me on before regarding political field trips, I believe. I think that particular method I came up with, so that people can directly experience local government, and as I would suspect, many of them would probably end up concluding that even local government is too much big government with all its despotic nastiness, which people really aren't really knowledgeable about, because their ideas of government usually come from either the public fool system or the mainstream media, or even their own parents and their biases. There's also that element too. So if you go and experience government directly, I think that's one starting point. Or if you're more of a legalistic bent, you could always cancel your voter registration, as I did back in 2013. I've revoked my consent to be governed to the extent the state will legally allow me to. So that is admittedly a legal interstice, for whatever that's worth. I would just say this, though. I think probably the most important starting point is to reject wholesale political crusading, this controlled schizophrenia with people who, for example, supported Ron Paul in 2012, now just four short years later or thereabouts, then promoting Donald Trump. I mean, that's amazing. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen. How do you go from Ron Paul to Donald Trump in 4 years? What kind of mind control has to take place for that to happen? Because, even Austrian economist Jeffrey Tucker, when he wrote his article called Trumpism, the Ideology, he even admitted that, you know, basically Trump is a mercantilist trying to have all this protectionism and really in some ways reactionary Keynesianism, which, of course, Keynesianism is all about encouraging the government to spend money in order to keep the skids of whatever the hell keep going. And it's all very pro-central banking, very pro-Federal Reserve. And I never once heard on the campaign trail, Maggie, maybe you did, I never once heard one word about the Federal Reserve. I never heard one word about bring the troops home. In fact, I kept constantly hearing, I'm very militaristic and I want to beef up the military so nobody will ever mess with us again. Right? That's what Donald Trump said on a certain radio show whose name I don't want to repeat because, well, he's betrayed his principles too. So that's kind of the problem. And I think related to this is what Rayo called collective movementism. And that's going to be rather hard for people to reject because I don't believe in social movements anymore. I think Rayo really made the clinching, convincing case. You join a socio-political movement of any kind, I don't care what the cause is. I don't care if it's single issue. I don't care if there's more of a broader ideological basis behind it. You join a collective movement, you're going to get hurt. And the very simple reason is that when you have a growth of any particular social movement of any kind, basically, and this is pretty much in direct proportion, as the number of self-identified adherents grow, the adhesion to whatever the original purpose or even principles were actually gets watered down and diluted. So by the time you actually ironically approach that critical mass that so many activists of many flavors like almost froth at the mouth at, they actually end up with a bunch of folks who don't actually agree with the original purpose of whatever it is they're promoting, but end up instead somewhere else. So I don't care whether it's environmentalism, I don't care whether it's constitutionalism, I don't care whether it's the various people's rights flavors, special interests of one flavor or another, or any other sort of movement. The problem is, as you get closer to getting to critical mass, your adherents become less and less consistent. They become hypocritical the closer you get to critical mass. So that is kind of the sad irony of collective movementism, which is why VANU, by contrast, is actually not a movement of any kind. It has nothing to do with cultural bowel movements, such as they are of one flavor or another. It's all about you as an individual achieving some degree of freedom, or shall I say, vanu, that invulnerability to coercion, at least in your own life, and then, of course, encouraging others to kind of replicate that, which, of course, is what I'm doing now, to replicate an invulnerability to coercion in your own lives.
Okay, and so you believe that by surrendering your right to vote, even in your local elections for something that might affect you locally in your town or your district right there, you believe that this is a way of basically telling them, I'm not going to play this game anymore. And so therefore, you know, I'm going to go home and I'm going to do my own thing and you guys don't have any power over me, right?
I guess that would be one way potentially of putting it. But then again, I mean, look, I'm not here to tell anybody what to do. I'm simply here presenting another option, another way of looking at things, as well as introducing some other methods that maybe people haven't thought about, that maybe a lot of folks should take personal responsibility for the lifestyle choices that they have voluntarily made that are actually making them vulnerable to coercion, making them vulnerable to the very tyrannies that they will often go into the alternative media, even if it's just, you know, a caller to a call-in show or something else, and say that, oh, the government is hurting me with something. But then if you actually go through a line of Socratic questioning to get back to the root of things, more often than not, and I hate to say this as it may anger some people, a lot of times people are in the mess they are in because they made some very foolish mistakes. Let me make this concrete. If you have somebody who, for instance, is worried about their homes or thereabouts because they got a mortgage. Well, there's your first problem, right? A mortgage is a death pledge, or whatever the etymological root word is. And considering how overregulated and overreaching the housing markets have been, right? And also there was kind of the issue with the subprime mortgaging crisis that kind of precipitated the so-called Great Recession, right, when Obama came in, right? Last time I checked, nobody forced those people to get the ninja loans. Okay, if you actually trace this back to a lot of different things, not always, to be sure. There actually really is real coercion and real tyranny. I mean, there is such a thing as American political prisoners. However, at the same time, and I mean, maybe this is getting a little bit into, you know, my next book, but the political prisoners, more often than not, when I actually have written up on my blog about each of their individual cases, as tragic and horrible as what has happened to many of them have been, unfortunately, there was always some sort of choice they made, no matter how innocent, that was more foolish than anything else that actually put them under the government radar, under surveillance. Just to use one example real briefly, Robert Beecher, who is incarcerated right now, and his expected release year is 2025, I believe. And he is an older gentleman, and it's been feared he will probably die in prison. We'll have to see if that actually turns out or not. Robert Beecher put up pictures of himself up on Facebook, and certain government informants and other people basically snitched to the various bludgies, as Rayo called them. Bludgies, of course, being government agents of various kinds, more specifically the police, the blue coats, the King's Guards, tin badge gods. There's a lot of synonyms for the police extortionists. But basically, somebody snitched to the bludgies that Beecher was taking pictures of himself that arguably would be self-incriminating of one kind or another, no matter how innocent they would otherwise be in a rational civilization, victimless crimes and all that. And next thing you know, one thing led to another, and now he's deprived of his sunset years with his grandchildren. So again, I'm not victim blaming or anything like that, but I do think that in terms of security culture, in terms of making ourselves more invulnerable to coercion, I think a lot can be learned from the political prisoners in terms of, okay, this is what happened to, for example, Jesse Newsom or William Wolf or Larry Myers, and even some other political prisoners I haven't yet had a chance to write about, that more often than not, there was some mistake they made that put them under the scope, as it were, and then everything else from that point is just the government basically smacking them down harder and harder, slapping the cuffs on, cajoling confessions, or threatening, or in Beecher's case, threatening his his daughter with taking away her kids and some other things. So that's kind of the long and short of it, is I think a lot can be learned from a lot of case studies. You brought up the Branch Davidians earlier. I think a lot can be learned in terms of basically using Rayo's book, free book, Vanu, The Search for Personal Freedom, as a kind of a jumping off point and understanding kind of what he was getting at. And then as Shane and I have been doing with the Vanu podcast at vanupodcast.com, to really kind of revisit a lot of what Rayo did, because this hasn't been done in 40 years, ladies and gentlemen, to basically revisit a lot of Rayo did and then expand upon it, which I think Rayo would be in favor of, expand upon it and develop it in that same spirit so that we can at least have at least a modicum of autonomy in this early 21st century.
Okay, so before we come to the station break here in about 5 minutes, what would you say to somebody who's saying that they want to be able to surrender their driver's license as well? I mean, and yet they still need to get around from point A to point B. There's not good public transportation where they are. They don't have a lot of friends that can help drive them from point A to point B. They believe that using Uber would be just playing into the system. And yet, surrendering one's driver's license is not that much different from saying, I'm no longer going to use the vote.
Well, regarding the right to travel issue, the freedom of movement issue, kind of separate from the more pure Vanu material, although Rayo did mention the travel regulations, which is what he called it, admittedly, Rayo at that time couldn't figure out a better way other than the van nomadism, the van dwelling. And he did admit, like, I just haven't thought of a better way on how to deal with this. And so he did admit he relied on legal interstices such as the driver licensure and so forth, you know, keep things on and about our van legal, as it were. But he was kind of begrudging about it and kind of wishing he thought he could think of a better way to deal with that, and he just didn't. I would just suggest, regarding that specific item, that people really look at, at my series, my extra-constitutional series, and more specifically the article entitled Extra-Constitutional Number 7, Do You Have the Right to Travel? And I do address things at considerable length. I try to keep it as short as possible, Maggie, but there was no real way I could think of to make it even shorter than it already is. I do address things like Uber, and I do address some alternatives to the so-called driving on the roads and such, because in that extra constitutional series I did, I was kind of concerned about what a lot of Rayo mentioned regarding the so-called public, not private, but public roads that are administered by the Texas government in particular, because that's where I live. And so through those earlier installments of the extra constitutional series, I basically go through the laws and what the Texas legislature did here to infringe on our right to travel and so forth. And in the last concluding article of that series, Extra Constitutional Number 7, Do You Have the Right to Travel? I do address some alternatives people may want to consider. One thing that Rayo in particular mentioned, which I did mention in that article as well, was one option for some people who can change their lifestyles this way would be maybe to get on a sailboat. And thus, let's get away from land, let's get away from the public lands and the public schools and the public roads and public, all this government-controlled nonsense. Let's get away from all that statism, that authoritarianism, and let's go on the open waters and use sailboats. Again, not a choice for everybody, but it's certainly there. I mean, last time I checked, does anybody need a sailboat license? Does anybody need to register their sailboat? Does anybody need to have emissions inspections for their sailboat? How about insurance? Do you need insurance for a sailboat? Again, those are questions that I need to be addressed on their own merits, but I think it at least is an option, just because the state, the bludgies, have so overly regulated how you can get from, let's say, your home, private property, to, let's say, another private property like a grocery store without using the public roads. They've made it so impossible to do that. And as a corollary to that, in that article, I also mentioned about road privatization, and I mentioned kind of, you know, the pros and cons of that, and especially in regards to Texas law, that actually, as best as I can tell, it would be a legal interstice to have a private roads in Texas, or I would be more in favor of a network of private roads. But again, I'm also not a spring chicken. I wasn't born yesterday. I also mentioned in that article some concerns I have, especially regarding the capital investment required. And again, even if there were some, I guess you could call them road entrepreneurs, even if, let's say, a network of private roads were to be established in, say, Amarillo or North Texas thereabouts, again, there's always eminent domain to worry about, which is what the road socialists, the bureaucrats, like the Texas Department of Transportation, for instance, just to name one, not to mention all the others, like Department of Public Safety and so forth, wouldn't try to use, I mean, is it inconceivable that they wouldn't try to use eminent domain to seize a network of private roads should somebody actually get that far? And see, that's the problem with the state. That's the problem with government, is that they always seem to have a Trump card, pardon the pun, they always seem to have a Trump card up their sleeve because they like to basically falsely imagine themselves to be our rulers. They perpetuate this institutionalized coercion upon the American people, and of course Texans more specifically where I'm at. So that's kind of the long and short of it, I suppose, is that in terms of answering your question more directly about the driver licensure, I think people need to be very, very careful. You have to keep in mind that traffic stops are really the nexus of coercion for all the other right to travel infringements, like the driver licensure, the vehicle registration, etc. And people get democided. And that's a term people really need to be familiar with, democide, or murder by government. Kind of like what happened to Lavoie Finicum. He was democided. Or Oscar Grant, he was democided. Let's see, there was militia chaplain Michael Hill, he was democided. That's government coercion for you.
Welcome back, my friends. This is Maggie Rose McGrath, and this is Revolution Radio here at www.freedomslips.com. For those of you that are not listening on your computers or laptops, but on your iPads, iPhones, or on your landlines, welcome again back to the show. We're in Studio A today and tomorrow from 12 noon to 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is 9 to 11 Pacific. And then Wednesday night, we are here again, the Concord Show with Maggie Rose, your host here, with Studio B, and that will be from 7 to 9 Pacific Standard Time, 10 to midnight Eastern Standard Time. We are talking right now with Kyle Reardon. He is out of Texas. He's a gentleman who's been basically educating me over the past few months on a lot of things. Some things I agree with him, some things I don't agree, and some things I'm kind of like not sitting on the fence, but still asking questions and still reading when I have the opportunity to sit down and be able to study and research, which is something he has been doing for a large portion of his life, is researching, asking questions. What we're talking about today is Vanu, or Vanuism, and he is one of those first that actually stepped forward to the plate, and this was a term that he found was comfortable for him. We're talking about the free Vanu book that you can download off of his podcast, or there at Bastille.com, which is his website, www.Bastille, B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E.com. Both he and Shane, his friend, have been putting up podcasts for some time, including the website Liberty Under Attack. You can go to that and find a lot of their information, materials there. What we're talking about is also right now a book, and section two is one that I found was really, really interesting. I read actually the first 34, 35 pages of this. This is actually page 38, which is where section two is talking about self-seeking free aisles. And what it says right in there is, quote, "How can you increase your freedom?" Now, this is from Rao. This is a gentleman who was practicing Vanuism from the 60s to the 70s and then suddenly disappeared. We don't know if he's any longer with us or if he just basically faded in the woodwork and decided to live a solitary life using and practicing much of what he wrote in this book. Again, it says, quote, "How can you increase your freedom? This is the theme for self-seeking. a continuing informal exploration of various ways for realizing greater personal opportunity in the present world. The range of interest of self-seeking is a lifespan of its readers. Self-seeking is looking for approaches to freedom that will yield results within a few decades at most, and which will directly benefit the liberators. Likewise, self-seeking examines ways for living more efficiently in the society as it is. To bring about general political economic liberty is a formidable task. Most political philosophers have concluded that a radical change in popular moral attitudes must occur before freedom can prevail. Ayn Rand aptly summarized this in his book For the New Intellectual, which is out of Random House, New York, 1961. Again, the title of his book is For the New Intellectual. And he says, quote, "The world crisis of today is a moral crisis, and nothing less than a moral revolution can resolve it." Well, I'd like to welcome back Kyle. Kyle, thank you for coming on the show again. Let's talk a little bit more about Section 2, should we? And how to put things into practice.
Sure. Well, I think it's also kind of important to kind of also mention how Rayo himself considered, you know, Vano and Vanowitz. There's one paragraph I would like to read. It's from the chapter or article. I think entitled Further Progress, Report on Progress and Problems. And this particular one was written in 1972. Rayo said, quote, "A Vanuan," someone who has an invulnerability to coercion, "a Vanuan to me is not just someone living in a particular manner. Lifestyles may change. A lifestyle which was Vanu 100 years ago may not be Vanu today. Some lifestyles Vanu today were not possible 100 years ago and may not be Vanu 50 years from now. A Vanuan is someone who places a high value on relative invulnerability to coercion, someone for whom freedom is worth a fair amount, though not infinite, of effort, inconvenience, discomfort. To a Vanuan, Vanu is not just a means to other ends, nor is it an ultimate end. Like most qualities of life, and life itself, it is both. A Vanuan will choose whatever way of living offers personal sovereignty, and will change lifestyle again and again, if necessary," close quote. So, with that basically being kind of the backdrop for a lot of the more specific stuff we're going to get into, that's the idea, okay? So, I know some people, the so-called preppers and others, are worried about some future socio-political, whatever the hell. Rayo elsewhere in the book goes into considerable detail basically saying how those who are pursuing vanuance, defined as being in the process of achieving an invulnerability to coercion, which is what I'm doing. I'm in process. I'm not quite there yet. But as I'm doing today, I am a Vanuist, defined as one who advocates for an invulnerability to coercion, which is what I'm doing now. But since I am pursuing Vanuance, of trying to achieve it, it's kind of important to look at the specific methods. So I think in the previous hour, I think you and I discussed the van nomadism, or van dwelling, as it's now known today, which is living full-time in a van, which, of course, is not for everybody, but at least it's an option for some people who want to be what even Alex Ansari would refer to as being home free, which is a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek reference there. So that's one method. Regarding what you just read just a moment ago, Maggie, you know, there's a couple different ways of arguably trying to, I guess you could say, organize people. One method would be kind of like a free aisle, or also known as a sovereign free port, kind of like a Hong Kong or thereabouts. But, and Rayo kind of mentioned that there are some benefits, but some kind of negative aspects to it, because you need some capital investment, right? The sovereign free port is a lot like having a private road. You need some serious investment capital to set up the infrastructure and so forth. And also, you need to have some sort of treaty or some sort of legal interstice, at least to some degree, with the hosting nation states, so that they don't like invade you or send IRS agents or DEA agents or, you know, pick a bludgie, one of the king's guards after you. So another thing he mentioned too, I think it was in the same chapter, was the notion of like an intentional community, which is basically where it's like a couple people kind of get together, probably in a rural area, and kind of start over. Arguably, this would be similar to what would now be thought of as off-grid homesteading, but yeah, recent experience would show that this is not exactly foolproof. You had me on before, many, many months ago, I think it was last year, on the demonization of the Costilla County off-grid homesteaders, the SLV Just Us group. And yes. So that was kind of an arguable example of an intentional community, or maybe it was an unintentional community, but it still worked the same, more or less the same way. And unfortunately, they were rather vulnerable to coercion, weren't they, when the county bureaucrats were harassing them, saying that, oh, you're committing nuisance abatement, we're going to write you cite tickets and drag you into court. And then, of course, the fake Judge Bruce Doucette and some other people basically went in there and totally broke those people up. So the lesson to be learned from that is, you know, if you're going to do some sort of intentional community, whether it's off-grid homesteading or some other variant, you have to have really good security culture. You have to value your right to privacy to such a degree that you can keep busybodies and infiltrators or just good old-fashioned troublemakers and con men. The coercion is not always by status. Sometimes you have to deal with a private criminal element like organized criminal syndicates and such, like the Camorra, the Yakuza, and others, right? So that's something to kind of consider, that maybe an intentional community, at least of some varieties versus others, are not always a way to go.
I have a question.
Sure.
For people wanting to remove themselves from a lot of this coercion and crap that's going on, we have a person that's listening into the show right now, and I think he's in Illinois, and he's got some daughters that are in their late teens. They're under the age of 22. And what do you do when you're going to be dragged into court because your ex is saying, okay, I want you now to pay for our kids' college bills and medical bills, but she hasn't allowed him to see his daughters since 2010. And of course, the daughters have been alienated against him. It's called parental alienation, alienation of affection. So here, if you're a person that does not want to be coerced or pulled into a situation where you're kowtowing to this corrupt statutory system. He wants to see his girls. He hasn't been allowed to see his girls. He may never be allowed to see his girls. He hasn't seen them since 2010. But here in just a few days, he's going to be pulled back into court and have to, you know, she's going for college bills and medical bills. How can the court turn around and say, you know what, we're really sorry she hasn't let you see your daughters in 7 years. But by the way, because of the fact that you are, I guess, in a sense, like the sperm donor, you've got to pay for all these expenses. How is it you can get the statutory corrupt system that you don't want to be part of to have any empathy in the courtroom at all, to have any sympathy that he is basically being treated like nothing but servitude, like a slave, like a sugar daddy?
Well, let me first say I'm sorry that he's suffering under that. Nobody should have to kind of go through that. I mean, the family law courts are completely tyrannical. And a lot of times it goes both ways, both genders, although some people have made the argument it's biased one way or another. I will just say this. A lot of the coercion of various kinds, a lot of times can be avoided. If earlier you had made different decisions that were voluntary on your part. So again, I am not blaming the victim, but what I am saying is I think an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. What I'm saying is that nobody forced him to sleep with her. Nobody forced him to, I'm assuming he was married at some point, that there was a marriage license perhaps. And if so, that marriage license actually makes the state a third party to your marriage so that later, when there are the fruits of that marriage, which of course are your offspring, then the legal doctrine of parens patriae come into play to infringe on your parental rights. So again, I'm kind of sorry to kind of give you the bad news, fella, but when you enter a courtroom, it doesn't matter what the subject matter is. We could be talking about traffic tickets, we could be talking about more of a income tax issue or something else. But the fact of the matter is, when you walk into a courtroom, just imagine right before you walk through the doors of the actual room that there's a motto above it that says, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter here." And again, I mean, if you don't have to believe me, you can go read Franz Kafka's The Trial. The long and short of it is this: because the courts, as such as they are, the government's judiciary is a monopoly, there is no justice, period. Unless, of course, you are one of those various special interests of various kinds or flavors. And many people kind of debate about, you know, which special interests are controlling the government this week. It doesn't much matter. Look, various special interests, whether they be fascists, whether they be socialists, whether they be feminazis, which I think is maybe what your listener is probably getting besieged by, or what some people think is the case.
Yeah,
or whether it's...
He said he was married at the time, yes.
Okay, well, then I'm sorry. Then maybe you shouldn't have gotten the marriage licensure. I'm just saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and that's what VANU is more focused on. It's not focused on legalities, because let me put it this way. By the time you're targeted by the bludgies, by the time they have decided to make you an enemy of the state, quite frankly, most of the time, it's actually too late. And I'm sorry to say that, and I take no pleasure in saying so. And again, my upcoming book, which just like all my other books are available for free download, and the free audiobooks, which are available too, some of which have copies up on YouTube, which of course that's perfectly fine, because I don't believe in intellectual property. I don't believe in copyright for ideological reasons, which would take 2 hours to explain why that is. I'm sorry, dude, but you are a victim of lawfare. In other words, I'll take an aside from here, although it's arguably related to VANU vis-a-vis legal interstices, but I'll just take a minute and just kind of explain this. Lawfare is the government's use of its own monopoly laws to infringe on your liberty. And so when you have, for example, a parent about to lose their children, and I mean, whether it's the government doing it, or as I think you were describing to me, a different citizen using the government as their own personal billy club, which is, I think, what you were describing, Maggie, then that's something also to consider, too. Oh, by the way, as a side note, that happens with copyright issues as well, where somebody says, oh, you're infringing on my copyright vis-a-vis Title 17 of the United States Code, as well as the Constitution, excuse me, the copyright clause in the Constitution. So, you know, not all coercion happens by government. There are private persons who will use government laws to attack their perceived opponents, and often unjustly, often in violation of, ironically, their property rights and so forth. And that's lawfare, too. So that's something to kind of keep in mind. So regarding more specifically the kind of example you brought up, there is such a thing as too little, too late. I'm sorry. I wish life wasn't like this. I really do. That's why I'm here advocating VANU, is because I'm trying to prevent more people from finding themselves in situations like that. So if to go back to the book, when Rayo was talking about his free mate and all that, I mean, he was not a monk. He was not, I want to keep this PG-13, but he was not a celibate man, okay? But whom he was with understood that it would be a violation of principle, it would be a violation of freedom to, if they had children, and honestly, we as far as the historical records go, we don't know if they reproduced or not, we just don't know. But if they had, that, you know, she couldn't go to the government as, you know, big sugar daddy government, the welfare state in particular, and demand the courts to do all this, you know, child support and other wrangling and all that. The point is, when you choose... I want to be careful how I phrase this. When you choose to be romantically involved with somebody, when you choose, and I'll keep this PG-13, when you choose to sleep with someone, you are, even if it's promiscuous, you are trusting them with your freedom. That is the hard truth of the matter. So, and again, I would say this works both ways, actually, both genders. It's an expression of trust, even if the trust is rather minimal, as in like a more anonymous kind of casual encounters, as some people would call it. So, again, I'm sorry that that's happening to you, bud, but you are a victim of lawfare, and it's just one more case study, you know, one more victim on the pile of statism, as it were. And again, there is such a thing as too little, too late. So maybe, dude, maybe you can find a legal interstice or two that might be able to help you. And I would suggest you do your own due diligence so you can see your daughters again. But I would suggest that for the future, maybe you should consider being a lot more careful about whom you share your bed with. And that, and I'm sorry, I wish life wasn't like this, but it is what it is. A is A.
Yeah, well, you know, the thing is, for a lot of people out there, I guess they're feeling that there's certain things, like let's say if you do work, not everybody has the ability to be able to work a job where they name their own hours and they are their own boss and all the rest of that. So therefore, if they go work a job and they want to provide medical for their wife or their children, then of course they're going to have to be married in order to do that. I mean, nowadays we're seeing a lot in the gay culture and the transgender culture in many states where they're saying, okay, these people also, your domestic partners, have a right to the same medical and everything as if you were legally married. So, you know, what do you do? Where is that fine line between making a commitment, not being married, but still being able to provide certain benefits? And then that brings you into the whole area of then being beholden to the local, state, or federal government for which you're working, right?
Okay, there's a couple different things that you're kind of mentioning there in combination. So let me just try to tackle each one differently because I think that's important. Let's deal with the so-called benefits. Again, at best, those are legal privileges. I mean, let me be clear about something, and I should have addressed this earlier in the first hour. There is no such thing as the right to vote. It doesn't exist. Let me put it this way. If there was no government, if statism really was brought to an end and we were living without government, without rulers, more specifically, if there was no government, would anybody bother voting for it? If there was no government, would anybody bother petitioning it? If there was no government, would anybody run for public office? I think the answers to those questions are kind of, you know, self-evident, as the founders themselves would say. So when it comes to these other so-called benefits or so-called advantages, or really what they really are privileges bestowed upon us by the state, at least in some degree, that's exactly what they are. You don't have any rights according to them. Now, look, I'm very much part of like what would be called the natural rights tradition of libertarianism, which I then go a little bit further. There's a little bit of a different topic I'll mention in passing here. I think that argumentation ethics is a logical proof that, of course, rationally demonstrates the private property ethic, such as it is, which of course validates libertarianism, and it also debunks basically virtually every other political ideology in existence. Different topic for another time. I'm only mentioning it here in passing to just simply say that when you look at these so-called privileges bestowed upon us by the state, like hospital visits, I think is what you were kind of getting at, those who falsely imagine themselves to be our rulers think that we should be grateful to them for whenever they've chosen to give us some scraps from the king's table. One of those scraps being things like visiting our loved ones in a hospital and so forth.
Right.
That's automatically a problem. So, you know, I mean, look, I'm not being ignorant or trying to sidestep the very real issue of being able to access loved ones if they're like injured or unconscious or whatever. I'm just simply saying there are underlying issues at play where maybe there are some assumptions you folks are kind of making which you shouldn't. Like, why are you going to a mainstream hospital? Why don't you have people that you know personally on an individual one-on-one basis or peer-to-peer, as the techno geeks whom I love dearly would put it? Why don't you know people on a peer-to-peer basis who can provide you whatever medical and, if needed, even surgical services as you require without going to a hospital? Just one idea I want to throw out there. You see, there are some underlying assumptions here. So when it comes to people being concerned about the so-called advantages of one kind or another, I mean, that's all part of what Rayo called the servile society. And the interaction that Vanuans have with the servile society are also what Rayo described as import-export activities. Simply put, you import into your, let's say, your Vanu shelter, whether it's stationary or mobile, knowledge, equipment, supplies, and so forth, and then you export labor. So we don't have a common culture with the servile society, okay? They're all about coercing people all day long, even their own people, which is what they do most of the time. We're different. We have our own mini cultures. You may have heard the term subculture.
Yeah.
We've got our own separate stuff, and our imperative is to develop our own infrastructure and to get better and have our own services. Heck, there was even another concept in this was more in section two of the free PDF book, Vanu, the Search for Personal Freedom, that people can download and follow along from the VanuPodcast.com. Again, that's V as in Victor, O as in Oscar, N as in November, U as in uniform, VanuPodcast.com. You can download the free Vanu book and even listen to the free audiobook too, so that you can kind of get an idea for what's going on here. But yeah, ethical enclaves. Ethical enclaves. You don't, look, I understand people are concerned about like certain services, right? Look, I think we all pretty much want electricity. And we want to need to get, a lot of us want a way to get around, you know, some sort of transportation something, right? A lot of us need to be able to communicate like what we're doing right now. A lot of us, I mean, there are certain kind of what many people would consider like basic utilities. And I think in a lot of ways, a lot of what Vanuism as a advocacy for, you know, achieving an invulnerability to coercion is really saying is, you know, even if you look at things more from the private property ethic, you know, we don't need the state. We don't need government to coercively tax us or use central banking inflation and debt. Well, what's the national debt now, like 20 trillion or close to it? I mean, it's insane.
Yes.
We don't need them to keep us alive. If anything, we the producers, Americans, actually keep the state alive, if anything. And I'm all Vanuism is basically saying is like, hey, let's shield ourselves from this beast that is the state, that is government, and not just the federal government, but also the several state governments too, who are also equally tyrannical, which is why I'm not a really big fan of the whole state's rights position, because all that is, although it is promoted by people who are well-intentioned, that's just preferring coercion on a more local scale. And of course, I think to break people of that is, well, go on a political field trip, then come back and, you know, say whether you're still in favor of states' rights. I mean, come on. This is grown-up libertarianism is all about using force, self-defensive force, to defend property rights. And in a lot of ways, that's kind of like what we're doing. However, self-defense doesn't always have to come into the equation. A lot of times, use of force issues can be avoided if you change your lifestyle. And this is more the core of Vanu, by the way.
Right.
It's changing your lifestyle in such a way to where it may very well be unconventional, quote unquote, by the servile society, where you don't have, you know, a 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath suburban house with a white picket fence and, you know, and a minivan and a 30-year mortgage.
Yeah, you're sounding a lot like I'm laughing because a few years ago, I was on active duty, the Wounded Warrior program out of Fort Lewis. I had to have some surgeries on my knees. And part of what they did was instead of having us have to live up there in the barracks, or in my case, because of my rank, I got to live in a hotel, they put us in what they called community-based warrior transition unit. And in this community-based warrior transition unit, I met a gentleman by the name of Bill. Now, Bill had been a member of the Army and the Army National Guard for over 22 years, and he ended up from many deployments overseas, Egypt and Afghanistan, Iraq area. He ended up having some really serious back injuries, and he ended up basically becoming medically discharged and also having his VA benefits. And right about that period of time, his wife at the time, they had two sons, his wife had decided that she didn't like the fact he'd been on so many deployments, and she decided to leave him, even though he was never going to make any more deployments. They got a divorce. They sold the house. One of his boys is now married. The other one is in high school. And he decided, you know what, I'm not going to live in a house any longer and have people telling me what to do, how to do it, having, you know, the property taxes and all the hassles with all the crap that's on the roadways. He did buy himself a pickup truck. So there's his pickup truck and his dog. So he does have a driver's license. But he went out and bought himself a boat. And he is now living on the coast up in Oregon, where I think the only thing he has to pay for is the slip, I guess, where you put your boat when you're not actually out on the water. But he is so happy. He's living a life of where he does not have to deal with all the crap that so many people are having to deal with in their communities. And every time we've seen him, he seems so happy and so relaxed. And he's basically living the life, I guess you would say, of Vanu, right, in many ways.
Well, yeah, I mean that particular method sounds more like the sailboat thing or some version thereof. But yes, although it may be very limited, and there are some other aspects in the time remaining I would like to get to in terms of some more practical stuff. But, you know, it's interesting you mentioned Oregon. You know, Rayo in the 60s and 70s was actually traveling around the Siskiyou region, more specifically. So it's funny you mentioned that. So that, I guess, that is kind of roughly the same area, at least in some sense. But yeah, I mean, so what Rayo did, besides, of course, living in the van full time, he then kind of started to slowly transition to living in different types of shelters that which were interesting. I think probably the first one was like a polypropylene tent of sorts. And he was just, again, being an engineer, he was experimenting with different designs and such. He also tried like a den type thing and some other things. Which of course would easily be its own episode and, you know, hour or two kind of going through all of that. He also, interestingly enough, and I think the so-called preppers would appreciate this, Ray was also one of the very first people to experiment and publish his results as he was kind of stumbling through it, because there were really not that much literature at the time about this. But food storage. Actually, he was one of the original pioneers in terms of developing food storage methods and techniques and experimenting with, you know, what kind of works, what kind of doesn't, and stretching your dollar out and so forth. That's something actually very important. I know I'm kind of barely touching on that here. But yeah, he was saying like, yeah, try this and don't try that, and kind of combining, you know, storable foods, because remember, he doesn't have access to refrigeration. Combining living off of storable foods, and again, that was a day in and day out life, was actually living off of the storable foods, plus kind of almost a more kind of quasi nomadic hunter gatherer type, you know, getting berries and, you know, shooting squirrels and whatever else. So I guess you could say like a quasi mountain man. Well, because remember, he was in the wilderness, right? I mean, keep in mind too, it's also possible for people to do Vanu in the cities, which Rayo recognized, but he didn't spend a lot of time on it. And honestly, that's something that I would like to focus on as Shane and I kind of go through the Vanu podcast series, is kind of maybe looking at some more detail. I mean, even Rayo mentioned about certain things like combining the van with maybe the so-called squatting at certain parks of one kind or another. There were some other methods where basically you kind of blend into certain, dare shall I say, ethnic ghettos that have a really good tradition of self-defense, and more specifically, defending themselves against the gangs, the private criminals too, because the cops won't do it. Because actually sometimes, depending on how well-armed those people are, you can actually be quite invulnerable to coercion and just blend in and avoid the coercion by the police. Although, again, there's a little bit of a give and take regarding the private criminals and so forth, or, you know, street gangs and just other people. So again, maybe not 100% invulnerable, but arguably better than in some areas, I suppose.
I think he talked about in page 48 or 49, he talked about floating communities. I thought that was really interesting, where these floating communities would, you'd need more medical educational repair skills. So people who would have a background in medical or education or doing various repairs, and being able to create tools of their own would be something that would be very invaluable.
And for people who are out of that bend, who I would say probably preferably don't get seasick, then yes, that would be kind of, yeah. And also Rayo kind of went into more detail than I have time here to go into, where he was essentially saying about, well, it's possible for people in their sailboats to kind of come together in like temporary, like, again, ethical enclaves where you can trade things that maybe perhaps you couldn't trade, you know, back in the servile society, if you know what I mean, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, where basically you can trade. And then, of course, if the Bludgies happen to come along, that would be like the Coast Guard, for example. If the Bludgies, that particular version of the Bludgies, come along, the Blue Coats, like their Red Coat predecessors, if they come along to try and bust up your voluntary and peaceful trading, which may or may not be legal, then obviously the practical real security culture technique would, of course, there be, you can kind of break up that kind of temporary artificial island, and everybody can just kind of scatter, and you know, at most maybe only one of you would get caught, but ideally, if you have enough early warning, you can actually kind of get away from basically these public pirates which is really what the Coast Guard is, unfortunately, and that kind of thing. There's one thing I kind of want to also, another thing I kind of want to address on briefly here in the time we have remaining. I think you mentioned this about like earning a living or the freelancing, at least to some degree. You know, Rayo was kind of, in terms of like import-export activities, the export part of it where you're, as he phrased it, you're exporting your labor out to the servile society so that you can then import the stuff you need. Because we don't have a culture with them. They're just kind of this alien foreign occupier, really, which is really one way of putting it. The exporting of the labor in a lot of ways kind of coincides with what a lot of libertarians, not really doing the Vanu thing so much, but have been also known as, like, you may have heard the term about financial independence or retire early or FIRE, also known as financially independent early retirement.
Right, that's my husband and I.
Well, I know that Jake DeSillis did a speech a while back, you know, about like four ways to escape the rat race, which people may want to look up. I think something like that, where you're either freelancing or you're doing the intensive saving method, which that's been around for years, which actually that would take a little bit of time to explain what that is, or you are having more of a lifestyle business. Or you're going to be a startup entrepreneur, which admittedly is the riskiest of the four methods. I think any combination of that stuff, I think, can easily be incorporated into Vanu. And Rayo kind of mentioned some elements of some of that stuff in a kind of primordial sense back in the 60s. I think he was stressing more the freelancing element of it because that's kind of what he was familiar with. But the idea being like, yeah, I mean, if you were to, let's say, live out of your van and then go to like the cities and like live there, you know, quote unquote, squat somewhere for, let's say, a month and work like a dog and be very, very, very frugal and save, then you can take that capital and then cut loose, as he put it, for like, you know, 2 years, depending on what your take home is and all that. So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do things. And again, this is just a very, very broad overview. This is why Shane and I decided to launch TVP, the Vanu podcast, at vanupodcast.com, is that this is literally an entire series to go into the nitty gritty of any of these particular methods and so forth. So, yeah, I mean, the whole notion of a just over broke job is really quite laughable. I mean, I know people have been propagandized to believe, especially the older generation you are, particularly, the typical American lifestyle, as I was kind of saying before, is the, you know, three bedroom, 2.5 bath, white picket fence. But you're also at the same time working at the same company for 40, 50 years or whatever it is. And then you retire with a pension and a gold watch. And that's your career. That's your life. That's the American dream. And really, it's a lie, really. Careers are a fabrication. They're artificial. It has nothing to do with actual reality. And even jobs, well, whether it be a good thing or a bad thing, the so-called job security just ain't there. So at that point, why not stress entrepreneurship? And Vanu very much stresses, in different ways, yes, entrepreneurship. And then some other libertarians have kind of develop that kind of on its own ways. You know, for example, I mean, you may be familiar with what some people would call like the Bitcoin entrepreneurs.
Yes.
You may be familiar with, actually, this kind of segues nicely into something else I kind of wanted to mention in the time we've got left. What some people would call crypto anarchy, which is really just more of a way of using digital technology to exercise any sort of freedom. And so whether that's using digital encryption, such as off-the-record OTR for instant messaging, whether that's using PGP, pretty good privacy, to encrypt your email, or, as is something that I'm doing more and more of now, except when I give public talks like this, is using ZRTP, the Zimmerman Real-Time Transfer Protocol, ZRTP encryption for VoIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, calls. So I think the use of encryption, I think, is going to be more important as time goes on. And even with the cryptocurrencies, there's also been a move recently because of some scandals involving the Bitcoin Foundation and others, because they're collaborating with the federal government, by the way. A different story for another time, but I wrote about it on my blog because it was actually kind of a big deal, except, you know, I got laughed at. Again, discussion for another time. But now there's been a move, which is something I definitely support, which is developing new cryptographic protocols for new cryptocurrencies, which are collectively called altcoins. And there's a lot, there's a very healthy competitive crypto market of sorts right now between the different cryptocurrencies to see, again, like the creative destruction of the free market, like what kind of free market currencies can we actually have? And so there are some like Monero. There are others of various different names. I think BIP coin, B-I-P coin, which is not the other one, but BIP coin is another interesting one because that's based on the crypto note protocol. I don't want to get too technical here, but just suffice it to say, Maggie, there's a lot of promise coming up in terms of various tools that can, I guess you could call them privacy enhancing technologies or PET. That's got its own Wikipedia page, by the way. Whether it's in terms of communications, whether it's in terms of I guess you could call it a form of free banking, but basically free market currencies, or even things you may have heard of, the deep web, like unfortunately what gained some notoriety a couple years back when Russ Albrecht got persecuted by the federal government. He's a political prisoner right now. He got life in prison because of he was able to facilitate the trade of certain things that the government didn't like through the crypto market known as the Silk Road. And interestingly enough, that has served as an inspiration for people to continue doing things, which I won't go into detail here because this is a public talk. But suffice it to say, there are more crypto markets now than there were before.
I know there was a big push to try to get him out of jail, but he's a young man, isn't he? Like in his late 20s, early 30s?
Well, yeah, and to kind of make a point about that too, just a little bit of as a side note, it's interesting that the federal government really doesn't like anybody using digital technology in order to win back or secure freedoms. Another case, this guy wasn't a political prisoner, but he's dead now. And actually, he and I are only about 2 months apart. I just learned a little bit ago. His name was Aaron Swartz. He was the guy who basically kind of built a lot of the different technologies that you and I use today. He was behind Reddit. He was behind Creative Commons, which is what I used for in terms of like copyright purposes or copyleft purposes for my blog and so forth, because I don't believe in intellectual property. Aaron Swartz was involved in a lot of other things, but ultimately he was indicted and persecuted by the federal government because he was copying articles off of JSTOR, which is an academic database, to try and make it free to the common public who may not have access to those cordoned off archives. He was basically looking at 35 years in prison and $1 million plus fine, and so he eventually decided to just commit suicide.
Oh no.
And and he would have been 30 years old today had he survived.
Oh my god.
I honor his legacy of open access, which basically means that, and again, it's true that not all truths need to be said there. I think there is a place for like trade secrets and such for like if you're an entrepreneur with like your startup business or whatever, but you don't need copyright or patents or trademarks or government laws to do that. You just use cryptographic technologies and encryption to keep your trade secret secret if that's what you're concerned about, many people are concerned about. And everything else that should be on the public record, you don't need to hide behind a paywall so that people can't read or watch or, and I will not name the guilty here, but listen to certain things behind a paywall. For example, one of the really good alternative media outlets that has open archives that does not hide their podcasts and live broadcasts behind a paywall is actually the Freedom Phalanx Radio Network, or FPRN, which people can check out at fprnradio.com. I know many of their different hosts have had me on over the years talk about various different topics, but they honor Aaron Swartz's legacy of open access. And I wish the rest of the alternative media would kind of follow that example, but, you know, there are some people that just want a paywall. Again, don't want to get into copyright too much here, but I think that, too, can be arguably considered part of VANU in the sense that, if we're trying to spread the message of liberty, as it were, which is the typical libertarian goal in many ways, you know, it's a little hard to spread the message of much of anything if you're hiding everything behind a paywall. So when Shane Radliff and I wrote our article, co-wrote the article on the libertarian case for judicial transparency, That was about making sure that we can actually, the public actually has access to court documents and such, especially relating to political prisoners, so that people can actually know what the government is doing. And this would be more specifically the federal government in particular. Because unfortunately, they too, the federal government too, hides behind a paywall called PACER. And I don't want the alternative media to be copying the federal government in terms of, like, everything's under, although it's ironic there too, because everything the federal government does is under public domain. So it should be open access, but it's not, because they have a paywall. And I don't want the alternative media to be kind of inadvertently copying the federal government by putting everything behind a paywall. And so I think in terms of, you know, reducing invulnerability to coercion, people need transparency of the government and other things that are already on the public record, such as it is, so that they can gain information, like, for example, about political prisoners or much of anything else that is already on the public record, and they can just, you know, go click, click, click and download it. And then, of course, if they find the information valuable, whoever's hosting material, I mean, there's always donations. There's always putting things, I mean, some people put things in escrow. There's digital escrow services available right now. Again, I don't want to spend too much more time on this given the time remaining, but there is a lot of options to deal with a lot of things that entail using free market digital technologies and not government laws.
Now, one of the things that Guile, as one of our listeners here, I'm going to quote what he just said. If it were free, there's two things I want to bring up here. One is a quote from Guile in the chat room, and the other is Jaro too. Guile says, if it were free to run the servers to hold the data, then the information would be freer. That's why if you believe in it, then you should support it. So I think what he's saying is that he knows it costs for many of these alternative media for their electricity. They're paying for, like here on Revolution Radio, they have like four different phone numbers, two that you can call in and two you can listen on your landline. And it's costly. And so, you know, it costs anywhere from $2,000 to $2,800 a month for all the different sites that are putting up and everything. And I think maybe one of the things that's helping support some of these costs is by paying $3, $4, $5 to be able to listen to all the archives for the rest of the month. So how is one able to, if one cannot afford out of their own pocket to pay $2,800 a month and they depend upon their listening audience and an alternative media to help them financially, where is there a place there where they can still financially be able to bring in the money if not having people pay for the archives?
Well, I have talked to several different alternative media content producers, especially over the past year and a half, exactly on this very issue. And again, the closest thing to a solution I've found is kind of coming more or less from Jake DeSillis and the sources of people that he kind of works with or has interviewed and such, where basically I think of those four different approaches to financial independence, I think arguably to answer this specific question about that is maybe if you guys had been intensively saving and did more of that, so that essentially you would have, okay, I'm going to have to crunch this down like a minute or two. Basically, here's your long story short. If you were basically if you had accumulated enough savings by living frugally or even increasing your income through like the other different ways and such, then essentially you would take those savings and invest them in various asset, they're called income-producing assets, and there's various different kinds. It would take a long time to explain. The short version, this is the strategy, okay? I don't want to get into tactics. The strategy essentially of intensive saving is that you would put your savings, your capital into income-producing assets, and you would grow and grow and grow that, and it depends on what your savings rate is. If your savings rate is something like 85%, you might be able to do it in about 10 years, or you can do it a lot shorter if you do some other things. Again, I don't want to get into the weeds, but here's the bottom line. Once you're at that crossover point where a job becomes optional instead of necessary, then I guess you could say you are financially independent, because all you would be doing at that point is paying your bills, or to answer your question about the cost of like a server or something like that, you would be paying your bills basically on a 4% withdrawal rate of your investment dividends. So the capital stock of those, and I don't want to get too technical, but basically the strategies of the capital stock of those investment dividends would essentially be maintained, and only the income that's being produced from those investments, you would actually then just kind of, you know, hop, skip, jump, press buttons, and then it pays your bills. And obviously, I'm trying to condense a lot of very complicated information as simply as I can, but had alternative media content producers been financially independent beforehand, then I think then any issues of like donators coming up short, like every once in a while, whatever, would be pretty much a non-issue. And so much like your earlier question about the guy who can't see his daughters or whatever, as you can see with Vanu or other methods that can be incorporated into Vanu, because Vanu is more of a libertarian strategy, by the way. I guess I should have said that earlier. You can take a lot of different things to make yourself as invulnerable to coercion as possible and really build the infrastructure ahead of time in such a way to where you're not vulnerable to things like bribery, or you're not vulnerable to things like, having your servers seized by federal agents because they're offshore, or one of a thousand other things I don't have time to get into here. But that's kind of, just strategically speaking, that's the idea here. I'm just suggesting one way about how to pay for all that stuff. But again, again, that's why we have the Vanu podcast, so we can go into much more detail about things like that. So what I'm saying is this. I don't think it's intellectually honest to say that because servers and whatever else cost X amount of dollars, therefore we have to put things behind a paywall. Uh-uh. This is the early 21st century. The rules have changed in terms of digital free market technology. There is a better way, and Aaron Swartz proved it. That's all I'm saying.
Now, we're getting close to the end of the hour. Real quick, Jaro said, I like the idea of sovereignty, Vanu, and Ubuntu, but I don't trust the humans I'm going to hide somewhere in order to be a hermit. Now, what is the difference between Vanu, V-O-N-U, and I've never heard this word before, Ubuntu, which is U like in uniform, B like in boy, U-N-T-U. U-B-U-N-T-U. What is that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know what he's talking about. I don't like it either for other reasons, but it's more of a technical reason, not so much a strategic or ideological thing. He's referring to Ubuntu, used to be a free and open source software operating system. Look, the free and open source software can be incorporated into Crypto Anarchy and then likewise into Vanu if you use it right and so forth. There's lots of different Linux distros or distributions. Richard Stallman and other people can talk at length about stuff like that. There's a lot of other options available, like Fedora and many others I just can't remember right offhand. And that would take a while to explain how all that stuff works. So I really wouldn't worry about that particular one he's worried about. You've got other options, use them already. I mean, Linux distros come a dime a dozen. But yeah, in the time we have remaining, there was a quote I did want to read that I think kind of sets the stage for a lot of things.
I would like to do that. I'd like to see if you can come back Wednesday night in Studio B for 2 hours and really get into more meat and the potatoes of this Vanu, because it, like you said, there's so much and there's people just really actively listening right now and they're asking questions. So would you consider coming back Wednesday night in Studio B?
I would consider it, but let's talk about that off air in terms of making that happen. But yeah, just for right now, okay. So basically, again, this comes from a report on progress and problems. I think it was in 1972. Rayo said the following quote: "The bad guys may be trying harder, but we are getting better at hiding much faster than they are getting better at seeking. It's amusing to read letters from people, conventional dwellers mostly, who delight in telling the Nuans, people who have an invulnerability to coercion, in telling the Nuans about all the things Big Brother will do to stop them unless they join a political crusade or something." Trump. "Big Brother already has 60 million laws and regulations or so." Remember, this was in the 70s. He's writing this. "Big Brother already has 60 million laws and regulations or so. If all laws were consistently enforced, almost every man, woman, and child would be in prison for one or more violations. But Big Brother can only extort so much taxes to hire bludge and build spy devices. And taxes are already to or beyond the point of diminishing returns. Each additional rule to be enforced means existing rules gets enforced less." And close quote. So I think kind of the idea of Vanu is that if you change your lifestyle and make different lifestyle choices, you can be free relatively quickly. Unfortunately, most people in the servile society will not do it because they don't actually want to be free. People can wave flags all damn day. They can even take a constitution every once in a while. Hell, that's been happening even recently. Pocket constitutions, we need to restore the what are you talking about? That's a legal interstice. Maybe it can help you, maybe it can't. You know, my next book is all about kind of trying to evaluate that very question. But even if it could, doesn't really matter in terms of day-to-day life, where a lot of it is just more issues of you taking responsibility for your own lifestyle choices and stop blaming other people. Stop blaming Obama, stop blaming Bush for things that were actually within your control, and maybe consider that, you know, maybe you shouldn't live in a house that's mortgaged for the next 35 years. Maybe you shouldn't be working at that corporate job from 9 to 5 where you have to obey a boss. And basically you have like a quasi-dictatorship of sorts, you know, during most of your waking hours. Maybe you should be like an entrepreneur. Maybe you should like move around a little bit. Maybe as Alex Ansari has now doing, because now he's more or less out of the RV, he's now an off-grid homesteader, because that's what he's decided to do. And I honestly think that Alex Ansari really is the modern-day Henry Thoreau. Really. I mean, I've even been rereading Walden, and I think that's what he's doing. So in terms of Vanu, I would just suggest this. Take responsibility for your own lifestyle choices and stop blaming other people who actually try to present folks with different options that they can voluntarily do so that they can avoid a lot of the coercion that many of us are concerned with, especially coercive things the state does like civil asset forfeiture, which almost nobody talks about anymore.
That's true. That's true. Wow. If we were to come back on, let's say, Wednesday night or another time, what would be our main focus to be able to tell people how they can find a way to either partially or completely disengage if they finally decide they're sick and tired of the rat race and they're sick and tired of being basically corporate slaves?
Well, I think there was an article in Section 2, and people may want to read this in the meantime, which was about called Opting Out, Vanu Economic Strategies. This was in 1972. If people read even that one article or that one chapter in Section 2 of the Vanu book, I think they can kind of get an idea for where to get started. But again, the podcast is called VanuPodcast.com for people to get the free book and so forth. And Maggie, thank you for having me on.
Oh, thank you so much. And are you and Shane going to be doing any more podcasts in the near future?
Oh, a heck of a lot more. Our lineup is so full, it's not even funny. There's so much to get into. And today has really just been a very, very cursory overview. And again, thank you for having me on.
Oh, not a problem. Now you want to talk again. It's Liberty Under Attack, right?
Shane's website is libertyunderattack.com. Mine is thelastbastille.com.
And there you have it. Cal's interview with Maggie Rose on her show, The Concord Hour. If you're a normal listener to this podcast, I'm sure a lot of this was, you know, just the same information presented in a different manner, you know, with some other stuff that Maggie tossed in there from her listeners, but I hope you still got some value out of it. I definitely do. And again, I apologize for the audio, folks. There wasn't a whole lot I could do with this one. Again, it was in 22K mono and I think she was recording with her onboard mic. I think that's what she does, actually. So, you know, maybe my recommendation in the introduction wasn't very good. I don't know. Anyways, hopefully it was at least bearable. And again, yeah, I definitely do apologize for it. I mean, it is frustrating, but what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But yeah, next week we won't have these issues, when I release my interview, on the Seeds of Liberty podcast. Thankfully, Jeremy is as particular as I am when I record and produce podcasts. So I'd like to go ahead and thank him for his service ahead of time because I won't have to do any audio production next week. Definitely fantastic. Anyways, thanks so much for tuning in and for being patient with us as we prepare for Season 2. The website is VanuPodcast.com. And if you haven't already, go pick up a free copy of Rayo's book, Vanu, The Search for Personal Freedom. The audiobook version is available as well. Just visit the website, again, VanuPodcast.com, and it's the second tab there at the top of the page. I'll end with a quote by Rayo. Quote, "Freedom does indeed need more full-time professionals, not collective movement preachers seeking a coterie of followers, but explorers, inventors, developers of liberated life ways," end quote. Vanu is yours for the making. And please, have fun doing it. We'll talk to you next week. We'll be right back.
VonnyPodcast.com.